Hi, everybody. Welcome to Fireside Chat number
231.
I usually have a comment at that point. I can't believe it, 231, but I won't make any comments this time. I can only say what I say often. It's worth watching the other 230, because there's a lot of good stuff at these Fireside Chats. For those of you new, this is my opportunity to just talk to you heart to heart, mind to mind. It's all spontaneous. Nothing has been written out. There's no teleprompter. Otto has not been told to stay in his bed. The hope is he will. But as we're starting a little late and he knows his contract calls only for a half hour, he may in fact leave in the middle. And that has happened. On occasion, his brother Snoopy shows up. And I really know loyal watchers or listeners, no, really watchers to the Fireside Chat, when I'm told at an airport, hey, say hi to Snoopy. Otto, I expect, but Snoopy means you're a very serious watcher of these videos because he doesn't make often appearances. So with that preamble, let me just begin in a different way by telling you first, this is fundraising month for PragerU. Everything we do is free. We're doing important work for saving America and the West. And it's just as much in my mind the West as America, because there's a certain value system we attribute to the West, and culture and art, and it's all being threatened by the forces of chaos. So in light of that, I ask you to help at PragerU.com or call, if you're in the U.S., 833-PragerU. If you want to make a donation from abroad, just go to PragerU.com. So I'm going to begin with a video about something that is coming out, the latest Otto Tales. Otto is the star, along with his friend Dennis. Otto Tales, the American Trinity. It's a term that I dubbed a long time ago. People don't know how to explain what they believe in. This has been my biggest lament my whole life. Most Jews did not know how to teach their kids Jewish values or Judaism. Most Christians did not know how to teach their kids Christian values or Christianity. And so it's not shocking that that so many kids are alienated from religion. They were never given a good reason not to be. Same with Americans. They weren't taught what it means to be American. If most kids would have said, hey, mom, dad, what does it mean to be an American? Most parents would not have had a particularly coherent answer. I don't blame them. I don't blame the Jews. I don't blame the Christians. And I don't blame the Americans. I'm just saying that's a fact. And I've spent my life trying to make these things clear. And the biggest help was when I came across coins, emptying my pockets one night, preparing to go to bed. And I looked at the coins and I had an epiphany. The American value system is on every coin. E pluribus unum, in God we trust, and liberty. E pluribus unum is Latin for from many one. That's it. There's no other country in the world with those three things on its coinage or its banknotes or anywhere else. That's the American Trinity. And they're all necessary. A lot of secular conservatives don't think the in God we trust part is necessary. It's a terrible mistake. The founders certainly did. And they were right. So this is the latest. Otto Tales is about the American Trinity. So this is to teach the Otto Tales books, which feature Otto and myself. By the way, there was a little girl about 7 years old who was reading Otto Tales. And then they introduced her to me. This is Dennis. And she looked at me and said, you're older than Dennis. She was a little shocked that I didn't quite look. The glasses are right and the white hair is right, but I am older than this Dennis. That is true. I don't feel that much older, but I am in fact. It was adorable, actually. A lot of kids are getting good values from this. So the latest one, these are read by different people, but in this case, I am the actual reader of it. And here is Jill Simonian, our terrific head of all the work that we do with kids, to talk about it for a moment. Take it away, Jill.
Hi, Dennis. It's Jill from PragerU Kids. Listen, I wanted to remind you quickly to tell all of your Fireside Chat fans to check out your Otto's Tales episode all about the American Trinity. It's on our website now. You're reading the story of liberty, in God we trust, and E Pluribus Unum to our youngest learners, kindergarten through second grade. You get to meet the other Otto, and of course, our book is available for everyone to purchase now. So remind everyone for me, okay? Okay, only on PragerU.com/kids. Thanks, Dennis.
PragerU.com/kids. Anyway, I reminded them in advance.
You did.
Thank you, Jill. You're terrific. And here you go with that. You're going to see a fair amount of Megan's arms today. It's really Megan's arm on arms. Good. Okay, so that's clear. This is very helpful. Kindergarten to second grade. You know, there was the biggest request from the beginning of PragerU, please make stuff for little kids. And we've gone whole hog on that, and it's worked out beautifully. And thank you, Jill, again. Okay. So, you know, you didn't tell me that would happen. Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay. All right.
Hey, Dennis, it's Jill from PragerU.
Oh, no.
Kids. Listen, I wanted to.
You know what? I am not editing this stuff out. I just want you to know chaos reigns even here. This is truly spontaneous stuff. And, I'm allowing it to stay in, even though it's embarrassing. I usually open up with thoughts and then take the video question and other questions. But the thoughts I wanted to talk about were, in fact, the video question. It's a rare time that that happens. So I'm going to start with the question. Now watch.
Hi, Mr. Frager. My name is Grace. I'm 22 years old from Cincinnati, Ohio. I've always been raised to work hard and save my money, but I'm with the inflation culture that we have now, I'm punished for saving instead of for having debt. Is there anything that I as an individual can do to keep my savings from disappearing? And also, if you would ever like to have a conversation on homeschooling, I'm your girl. Thanks. Bye.
I would like to have a conversation with her about homeschooling. Obviously, she's not a mom, so it's about her having been homeschooled. So remind me of that. You're very charming, Grace. I would like to do that very much. So let me get ready. Oh, I'm telling you, I'm mastering this this thing. So here you go. Inflation, punished for savings. So I want to tell you a little about inflation. It's not a sexy topic, and I fully understand that. Give me a few minutes, and I'll show you how unbelievably important it is. I'll begin with a rather dramatic fact that most people don't know. And even the ones who know don't quite think about that often. I have a great deal of knowledge about the Nazi period. And I can tell you something that most people, as I said, don't realize. The Nazis were elected, even though they didn't get a majority of the Germans' votes. But in the 1932 elections, they became, I believe, the biggest party in the Reichstag, the German parliament. Even though they didn't get more than 50% of the vote. It's a very interesting fact that Hitler played down anti-Semitism to appeal to more Germans for votes. So I say it as a Jew and as somewhat of a historian, that the notion that all Germans were anti-Semites is just not true. This doesn't absolve Germany of the most hideous crimes recorded. Nevertheless, if you don't start on a basis of truth, you can't progress in life. And if it wasn't anti-Semitism then that elected the Nazis, Hitler and the Nazis, what was it? And the answer is inflation. Inflation was the greatest single contributor to Nazi popularity. If you check this out, inflation in the Weimar Republic, was the name of the German Republic between the end of World War I in 1918 and the Nazi ascent to power in 1933 after the 32 elections. In the Weimar Republic, the inflation was so horrible that prices would change on items more or less every hour. You will see pictures, it's worth looking up, of people with money, cash, in a wheelbarrow, taking it to the store to buy a loaf of bread. It took a wheelbarrow worth of cash to buy a loaf of bread. That was the worst inflation, I think, that we know, in at least in modern history, the one that took place in Germany in the Weimar Republic. Had there not been that inflation, the Hitler probably would not have been elected. Inflation is so utterly destructive that it can bring demagogues to power. Because inflation, even more than a high tax rate, literally robs you of what you have. Because if you have, to put it in dollars, if you have $1,000, and you could buy $1,000 worth of things, but in the next year or the next 6 months, you can only buy $100 worth of things, you have been robbed of $900 in that period of time. Inflation is a thief. And people understand this, and it's very scary. You worked your whole life, you saved, or like Grace, who just asked that question, she's only 22. But she's been told her whole life the right thing to do is save. But why save if my money is going to be worth a lot less next year? It's a very legitimate question. But before I answer what she might do, I don't have a perfect answer, but I have some answers. You must understand this is a scary, scary thing. And I'm the guy who's against being scared. I'm the guy who from the beginning of COVID said, don't be scared. But I'm scared of inflation. I got to admit, that scares me. Because I know how it can wreck a society by wrecking a vast number of honest people's income and savings. Well, what's the biggest source of inflation? Among the biggest sources, of course, is when the government keeps printing money, which is exactly what is happening in the United States. Oh, $1 trillion here and $1 trillion there. Do you know how much a trillion is? A trillion is 1,000,000,000,000. By the way, is that correct? No, 1,000,000,000 is 1,000,000,000. Sorry, it's more than that. It's, let's see, nine, it's 1,000,000,000,000. 1,000,000,000,000. I wish there was no word trillion. I wish the word were not a trillion, but 1,000,000,000,000. People might have an idea of how enormous a sum that is. So we passed budgets in the United States now, $1 trillion here and $1 trillion there. When you manufacture money, by definition, it gets worth less. That's called inflation. Printing money that has no backing, just you're printing it in order to give more to people or to spend more on your favorite projects. This is a major, if not the major, cause of inflation. I'll tell you another one. At the present time, is the price of energy. Without energy, you don't have civilization. Okay, look, that's pretty clear. You don't have heat in your home. You don't have anything that you can cook with. You can't drive a car. You can't fly an airplane. You can't do anything. You go back to ancient civilization where people did not have these forms of energy. And if you start charging more for this second most necessary item after food, if you start charging more and more and more for it, then obviously you have inflation as well. Why are we charging more for energy? Because environmentalists tell us that we should not be using natural gas, we should not be using coal, we should not be using oil, we should not be using anything except turbines, that is wind and solar power. That unfortunately, or fortunately, well, I would say even unfortunately, is a fantasy. I would be very happy if we could power everything with turbines and solar panels, but we can't. This is a fantasy for the future. We could power everything with non-fossil fuel if we went for nuclear power. Nuclear power could, in fact, supply the needs that we need with zero carbon emissions, but environmentalists are even against that, which proves that they live in a fantasy world and are not really, really concerned with carbon emissions. They're concerned with a fantasy of sun and so and wind powering everything. But sun and wind is not particularly reliable, especially when there's not much sun, like in Germany, and much of Europe, for that matter, northern Europe, and where there may not be enough wind. So I just need to tell you that this combination of printing trillions of dollars and overpaying for energy is a very dangerous combination, making for inflation. And inflation is a very scary thing. Told to you by a guy who was not scared of COVID. I was scared of the lockdown more than I was scared of COVID. From the beginning, you can watch my video chats from the beginning. And I turned out to have been right. This is not to brag. It's just to tell you that you probably get better information here than from the mainstream media. So I think your question is valid. What should you do? Well, if cash savings is cash, if cash isn't going to be stable and just be reduced in value, as soon as you can, invest in things that will not be as volatile as cash. Invest in try to buy the cheapest apartment that you can buy and rent it out. That would be a big help. You would have equity. People will always need places to live. So invest in something. Invest in some commodity, maybe gold, maybe silver. There's a lot of emotion on those subjects. I don't have any emotion on the issue, but I don't see why people would not have some of that to back up the inflation of cash. So that's what I would advise you to do. And my heart breaks for you because your generation has been so hurt by the left. And if you don't know who hurt you, you can't solve the problem. The left has hurt you. The left hurt you by depriving kids younger than you and even people your age of school for no good reason whatsoever. Except the only good reason was that teachers are perhaps the most scared group of human beings in the Western world. I don't know why. Maybe you learn to be scared in schools of education. Maybe you get a degree in fright. I don't know exactly why, but it was painful to see teachers refuse to go into classrooms during COVID. Painful. In Sweden, they went into schools. They didn't close down schools for one day in Sweden. And they kept them open for kids up to the age of 16. And he's snoring, which is part of, that's in his contract, that at some point he will snore during the fireside chat. I happen to find his snoring quite adorable, actually. And in Sweden, they kept the schools open. No teachers died and no students died. Sweden was the living refutation of everything that we had done in the West. And nobody wanted to take it seriously. So your generation has been hurt a lot. You've been deprived in America. You've been deprived of your history and your future. The message of the left to young Americans is, your history stinks and your future stinks. Isn't that charming? It's a happy group, the left. Yeah, right? Did I in any way exaggerate? Your past is filled with racism and slave owners, and your future is filled with existential threats to your life. Existential threats to biological life because of global warming. Nobody I know denies that the globe is getting warmer. What we do deny is that it poses an existential threat. 1990, Al Gore said it was an existential threat. If we didn't solve it in 12 years, it would be too late. In 2002, it wasn't too late. So he said another 12 years. That was 2014. Wasn't too late then, so he told another 12 years. So we have till 2026. In 2026, nothing will have happened, and then we'll have another 12 years, or we're doomed. And yet their bluff is never called. Never. I have a riddle on that. You may enjoy it. I've really developed only three riddles in my life. Here's one of them. What do you call a religious person who says the end is near? A fanatic. What do you call a secular person who says the end is near? An environmentalist. Good one. You're allowed to laugh. We have people here who are sitting in, and they're so quiet. I was a good one. And nothing, death. It's like a funeral home. By the way, I do have another riddle. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, you don't have to laugh yet if you're not laughing. I'm not telling you to laugh. I'm only giving you permission. Is that exact clear, guys? Okay, yeah. Thank you very much. So what do you call a happy black American? A Republican. That, by the way, you have no idea how true that is. By the way, that's true for any group. What do you call a happy American, a conservative? Because there were no happy leftists. There were some happy liberals. There were some unhappy conservatives. But there were no happy leftists. That's why college makes you less happy. There's no doubt in my mind it does. Kids who go into college unhappy come out unhappy. But a lot of kids go into college okay, and they come out unhappy. Because, among other reasons, you know what you really get a BA in at college? Ingratitude. You know what you get a master's in college? Ingratitude. And you get a PhD in ingratitude. And no ingrate in history was happy. It's a chapter in my book on happiness, that it is not possible to be happy if you're not grateful, and every leftist is ungrateful. The moment you become grateful, you leave the left. Literally that moment. That's why, by the way, I would say to conservatives, don't even speak about conservatism. Just speak about happiness. Because if you could produce happy, grateful people, you will have solved the problem of the left's nihilism in our societies. Okay, let's see the other questions. Oh, yes. I put it there. Okay, by the way, the questions are getting longer and longer, which is fine with me, but it takes a long time to then read the question on the fireside chat. So try to keep them brief, even though what you have to say, I must say, is always important, and including some of the humor you have. Is he moving around? Hey, Otto, what do you say? And the answer is nothing. The answer to the question, what do you say? Ooh, ladies and gentlemen. If anybody can explain to me why Otto sends his tongue out half a foot, I don't know the answer. Is he bringing in oxygen? I really have no idea, but he loves doing that.
A bulldog thing, maybe.
A bulldog thing?
Yeah, certain breeds.
I know, you're right, but why? Snakes do that, but I know they do that. Don't they do that to like feel what's happening and so on? I don't know if he does that. Yeah, okay, it doesn't matter. Is he continuing?
He's good.
All right, Otto. He's getting ready to leave. I could tell. I know. I know his body language. Okay, thank you, Grace, for that question. Law? Is that person's name Law?
I guess so.
Wow. Does he have a brother order? My son's Law and Order. That's a good one. I never heard them. Did you ever hear the name Law? God. I have three very serious Catholics watching this, by the way. And they never heard of somebody named Law. Wait, Lex. There you go, Lex. You could have said Latin. What's wrong? It's painful. Law 57. Wow, that's old for a questioner. Coming, Georgia. Dennis, I'm a listener, not a watcher, so arms and dogs and whatnot are all in my head. That's funny. I'm a listener, not a watcher. I got that. I'm not visually impaired. I'm just too busy to sit. He's too busy to sit and watch. Oh, so he moves around and listens to the fireside chat. That's fine. My question, why don't you voice your audible books? I have the Rational Bible, Genesis and Exodus, and Deuteronomy when it's released, October 11th, 22. Wow. This is a serious reader of my Bible commentary, which is the really important stuff. I hope you'll read it. on Audible. I am sure you are an incredibly busy man, but if you voiced those commentaries, they would be elevated to treasures for many of us. Tom Parks does a great job, but to have you read your life's work, I believe would be so much more enjoyable and meaningful to your audience. I admit it's a selfish thought, and if you hired someone with a speech impediment to read, I'd still buy them. They are fantastic and significant works of literature. Thank you for those words. I think they are important, actually, if I'm allowed to say. Otherwise, I wouldn't have spent this amount of time doing it. My Bible commentary, The Rational Bible. I intend to read them all. God grants me, or life grants me, luck grants me, whatever does the granting, the energy I have. I mean, that's not an issue, but obviously the years to do it. I would like to finish writing the five, and then I will record them. In the meantime, Tom Parks did a great job. But that is my hope to do that. By the way, you have no idea how hard it is to read a book. You have no idea. I tried with one of my books. I couldn't believe I wrote it and kept making mistakes. It is very hard to read perfectly. And so they go over. That's why there's a producer. You may not even have caught your mispronunciation of a word or missing a word, and they do. Okay. George, 73. This is Senior's Day. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. When you're with friends talking in general, is it difficult for you not to go into lecture mode? It's a great question. It's a great question. I am a Prager supporter and love everything you do. Really? Everything? Wow.
All of it.
But you don't know everything I do. That's not true. I'm pretty damn transparent. You know nearly everything I do, even my fountain pen love. You know, I have a great line on the transparent. So one day, a guy calls my radio show. For those of you who don't know, I have a daily radio show, 3 hours, and I think you'd enjoy it a lot. And it's easily found on the internet or in your local radio station. So a guy calls me, Dennis, I have a word for you. And I'm thinking, uh-oh. I have a word to describe you. And I gambled because it's live radio. There's nothing I can do. And he goes, you are transparent. And I thought, that's exactly right. And I aim to be transparent. It's a beautiful thing to be transparent. I think we should do, when nothing horrible is happening in the world, which may not occur in my lifetime, I want to do a talk here on being transparent. So anyway, I mentioned this at a fundraiser for PragerU. I remember where because of what I'm about to tell you. Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I told the story. I was talking a bit about myself, and I mentioned the story. This guy said I'm transparent. After I spoke, my older son, David, who was the head of fundraising for PragerU, he's very talented, very gifted guy. And very, very, very funny. Gets up and he says, my dad told you that what this man said to him on the radio, what he didn't tell you was how challenging it was for me to grow up with a trans parent. I burst out into laughter. The place just went nuts. That was witty. That was very, very witty. Anyway, yes, so here you go. Is it difficult not to go into lecture mode when you're with friends? So are you asking that of me or in general? I'll answer both. I assiduously avoid lecture mode at a dinner party. Assiduously avoid it. In fact, I am infinitely more interested in asking people questions than in speaking. I have ample opportunity to talk to millions of people. I don't lack for that. I don't need to be the center of attention at a dinner party. I have no desire to be, in fact. So, but I am very interested in people. I really am. As I've said all of my life, I have contempt for humanity and I love people. So that's my combination. So I almost always with people just ask questions. Obviously, if I'm asked a question, I'll give an answer, but I'll give generally a very brief answer. I don't ever want to enter lecture mode. Also, another thing, my quote-unquote lecture mode is very similar to my real talking mode. I don't have a lecture mode. That's why people who hear me on the radio, for example, and then meet me go, wow, you sound the same. Because I talk the same. I don't have a lot of people, hey, welcome to my show. It is great to be with you here. I don't have that at all. This is me 24/7. Well, not 24/7. I do sleep. But nevertheless, so I don't have that. But for everybody else, in other words, the same rule should apply. My rule of thumb is, if you're talking with a group and you're talking for more than 2 minutes maximum, stop. If people want you to talk more, they'll ask you a question or they'll say, oh, please continue that. Otherwise, you probably are talking too long at that time. It's a very important rule of thumb. It is much better to shut up quickly or relatively quickly and want people to hear more than to stay talking and want people and people want you to speak less. So, you know what this is all predicated on? Know thyself. A very good rule of life. And what does know thyself mean? It means a lot of things. I'll tell you one thing it means. Look at yourself from outside yourself. It's a wonderful ability to try to create, and you will be much more desired by people if you could look at yourself from outside yourself.
We're good.
That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't get to take the question from Desjardins, which I just wanted to say in French. That's his name, Desjardins. What a combination today. Lou, Desjardins, and who else? Oh, no, not Lou. Law. That was it. All right, what am I going to do? Better to people who want more. There you go. That's why I keep it down to a half hour. All right, everybody. I do, again, advise you, if you have the time or inclination, pick any number of out of 231, mm-hmm. and just listen. A lot of wonderful things transpire on these fireside chats. I'll see you next week. Thank you for watching. Thank you for watching this video. To help keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.